I don't care if my days are lived in full health or suffering. I just want to grow old with Kirsten and watch my little boys grow up and hold my children's children one day. That was my initial prayer, I think, was just that sort of perspective, I think, that rushes upon you and you react to when you realize how fragile your life actually is. It was the most spiritually formative year of my life, and it was the hardest year of my life.
And it seems like those two, for many of us, go deeply together in a way that you kind of have to experience to fully grasp. Hi, my name is John. I'm a sinner, but here, the worse your story, the warmer your welcome. And I want to give a really warm welcome today to Tyler Staton. We've been connected for a couple of moments right now, and it will be a miracle if the technology works. So we're just going to go forward and pray for a miracle. A lot of you who are watching know Tyler, but in case you don't, I'll just say a few words about him. He's a pastor of Bridgetown Church in Portland. We were able to have dinner with a few other folks a couple of years ago at a conference in Portland, and that was the first time I got to hear Tyler speak in person. He is a remarkable communicator. He's written, among other things, a wonderful book on prayer, Praying Like Monks, Living Like Fools. Has a book that has attracted a lot of interest, even though it's not yet come out, called Familiar Stranger.
Yeah, it's out in about 10 days, so maybe by the time people are hearing this.
Congratulations, and
Thank
I'm
you.
super honored to have the chance to have this conversation with you.
Oh, thank you, John. I've shared this with you before, but you have been a massive influence on me from a distance through all your writings for many years, and a joy to get to know and call friend. So I'm super grateful to get to be here.
More recently, Tyler and Kirsten, his wife, were up in the Bay Area for an event that's part of the organization that my wife Nancy has been involved with for a decade. And it was so good to be able to get together, the four of us, and talk about life and family and ministry. And I asked Tyler if he would chat for a little bit today. And here's what I thought we would explore, Tyler. We're become news this. Kind of online fellowship. We're walking through the 12 steps as a pathway to spiritual growth, thinking about that third step, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. And you've got a journey. I mean, anybody who is trying to follow Jesus is working on that, turn my life and my will over to Him. You've had a journey over the last few years that has involved your health and just having to deal with stuff that somebody your age usually does not have to deal with. So, first of all, could you just tell us a little bit about that journey on the health front and let everybody know how you're doing right now?
Yeah, I was quite unexpectedly diagnosed with cancer. It would have been a little bit over 18 months ago now. And that diagnosis was stage 1A. It was, if you're going to get cancer, it was the best diagnosis you can get. Didn't require any chemotherapy treatment or anything, just a surgery. And hey, we got it all. Biopsy's clear. Let's move forward. And then, quite unexpectedly, 6 months later, just a year ago, really about exactly this time, it was discovered that it had in fact spread and that there was now the most advanced stage of cancer, attached to multiple vital organs in my abdomen, and I was going to require some very, very aggressive treatment. And my short and long-term future was very in question. And so that was quite a journey to walk through with Jesus in the last year of my life. Very unexpected. Certainly put a stop to a lot of the activity in my life and greatly slowed other activity. And thankfully, as of this recording, I am fully in remission and am no longer receiving chemotherapy treatment. I am continuing to see an oncologist. I require ongoing weekly treatment. However, all the signs are pointing to full recovery for me. And I feel healthy and like myself again right now.
Well, thank God, thank God, thank God. I remember when that announcement got made to your church, you know, there mm-hmm. was so much joy. And you're a dad of, you have three children?
Yeah, three little boys.
How
eight,
old?
6 and 2.
8, 6, and 2. So on the front end of family life and ministry life and so many roads before you that are and that look so wonderful, and then to have something like this hit, you know, we all live with the illusion that we are somehow in control and that there is a kind of normal road to life that we can more or less expect. And of course, you teach on this kind of thing and write on it in ways that are just brilliant communication. What was it like for you after you'd heard stage 1A, thought you knew what category it was in, and then to hear another message that was much more dire? How did you find yourself thinking? How did you respond to it? What did you find that did to your world?
Immediately, I remember, you know, going from what I thought was a routine doctor's appointment, because I thought, you know, just to be very honest, I had pain in my stomach. I thought, oh no, I might have kidney stones. That was like the worst case scenario in my mind, because I had these shooting pains that would keep me up at night, these aches in my back. I never imagined, it never even entered my mind that I might have advanced cancer. And so I think immediately I remember lying alone when they sent me from one exam to another, and I was waiting on the technician to come and like do the scan on me. And just lying in this dark hospital room with no windows, looking at the ceiling. And the prayer that came after me was, or that came out of me was, God, just don't let my days get cut short. You know, I just started to think all my days were numbered for me before one of them came to be. And I said, Lord, I don't care if my days are lived in full health or suffering. I just want to grow old with Kirsten and watch my little boys grow up and hold my children's children one day. So give me the inheritance of Psalm 128, and whatever quality of days I get will be just fine with me. So that was my initial prayer, I think, was just that sort of perspective, I think, that rushes upon you and you react to when you realize how fragile your life actually is. At least I have found a way of living most of the time that convinces me otherwise, but that is the truth. And then subsequently, it was both, if asked to summarize the last year, I would say it was the most spiritually formative year of my life, and it was the hardest year of my life. Both of those statements are true at the same time.
And it seems like those two, for many of us, go deeply together in a way that you kind of have to experience to fully grasp. But say a little bit about what's the connection between hardest year of my life and most formative.
It seems to me that there are two primary ways that we are spiritually formed in discipleship to Jesus. And one is by our practice, and the other is by our submission. So our practice would be all of the habits I choose that shape and form me over time. And our submission would be the circumstances of my life that I do not choose, but can submit to as the conditions through which my soul can be formed. And I guess I felt like I had a choice to buck and fight against the circumstances I was facing that I would never choose. And that can look like denial. It can look like trying to continue going at exactly the same pace. It can look a thousand different ways. But to essentially kick against the goads, in the language of the Apostle Paul, or say, okay, Lord, this is the hand I've been dealt, and I don't believe it is your divine will. God created a world without mourning, sickness, crying, or pain. He's redeeming a world without mourning, sickness, death, crying, tears, pain, any of that. This is a consequence of the serpent's deception. And yet, even what the enemy intends for evil, you can use for good if I am willing to put it in your hands. And so I tried to say, okay, God, here's this window of my life. I don't know how long it will be. But will you do things in me that you cannot do when I'm in normal operating mode during this unique window? And I guess I would liken it to, there are times when we are sick and we need a prescription, like you need to take some pills as you keep living, and these pills are going to help sort out the virus that is within you, or the strand that is within you. And there's other times that you're sick and you just need to lie still on the surgeon's table while he works on you with a scalpel. And of course, the more deeply sick you are, the more likely you are to be in need of the scalpel. And that's what I felt, is like, oh, this is surgery. This is, Tyler, you're going to need just to lie still while I get at deep places in your soul that you have been able to ignore in all of your activity. And so maybe just to give one example, I would say, John, you know me, so I've been a pastor since I was 22, right out of college. And so that means for the whole of my adult life, my primary participation with God would be like working on his team to see his kingdom come. And my primary way of relating to his church is helping lead and shape and shepherd the people. And that has produced probably a disproportionate amount of at least the illusion of control for me, because I've gotten to be in charge a lot. And if you were to ask me, you know, for a young man, is being in charge more or less from 22 a good or a bad recipe for the maturity of the soul? I would say it's a disastrous recipe. And yet that has been my story.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, I was exposed in front of God and the church in all of my weakness. And I needed not to lead, but to be led. And I needed not to love, but to be loved. And the experiences that I had of God's love for me mediated through the people in my congregation who companioned me through 6 months of chemotherapy were unforgettable. There were moments of encountering the living presence of Jesus through his people, loving me for my being, not my doing, in ways that were taking little broken pieces of my soul and little lies the serpent had whispered that were still tangled up in me, and detangling the lies and piecing back together pieces of my soul, and helping me come alive to his love and mercy, not my competency. I would liken it to something like I imagine happened for Peter on the beach, the other side of denial, when Jesus came and found him and said, yeah, this is who you really are. You know, you thought we were going to take the kingdom by force and you were ready to stand by me if everyone else walked away. But now you've seen yourself and all the weakness that I've always known you. And you're still the rock that I want to build the church on. And I feel like something like that happened to me. Like, Jesus, let me see who I really am in a more sober-minded way than maybe I had talked myself into believing. And yet he still loves and empowers me and chooses me. And that was a profound revelation. It just couldn't happen in the midst of my health. And in that way, I would say I experienced redemption in spite of suffering or in the midst of suffering.
Yeah, I think most of us, certainly I, will struggle not so much with the claim that God is a loving God as much as, does he really love me? And with all of my failures and ways that I'm disappointed in me. And it sounds like what you're saying is, when you couldn't lead and you couldn't preach and you didn't know what the future would be and didn't know if you would be accomplishing anything more, a sense of being loved by God and by other people or through other people somehow got through in a deeper way. Was it like that?
That's exactly right. Yeah. In a more personal way. You know, like you're saying, it's easier to believe that God deals with humanity by grace than it is to believe that God deals with me by grace. That's the metric with which he sees me. It's the, you know, the lens through which he looks at me. It's how he knows me. Because I don't know myself that way most of the time.
Tyler, how did you navigate, you know, in step three, there's this idea and it sounds so clear, made the decision, turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. And yet at the same time, when you really think I'm not in control of it, there's all kinds of desires and I would guess different emotions of trust, fear, uncertainty, love. And so sometimes people will think of turning my will or surrender to God as being passive. But we know that it's not a call to passivity. We're still to be agents. What did it look like to you to think about turning your life over to God?
I think that I had to make a threshold decision to surrender and submit to the circumstances that I was facing as the perfect place for Jesus to find me and to heal me at first. So I had to maybe set my intent, to put it in the Willard Vim language of vision, intention, and means. I had to set my intent up front. And then what I discovered is every single day, there were impulses in me that wanted to grab back for control over my life, which in the midst of chemotherapy looked for me and my personality makeup and everything like I wanted every day to reach back for the life I had before my diagnosis. I wanted to feel like I did then. I wanted to go on a run in the morning like I did then. I wanted to know the ignorant bliss that I had then. I wanted to perform at work the way I was capable of then. I wanted to laugh in the evenings with my family the way I did then. And And every day, I think I had to make a choice to resurrender all over again that day, and sometimes several times a day. But what I also found was that God was very gentle with me in making those decisions to surrender. He wasn't aloof and far off with his arms crossed, seeing if I would choose him again today. It was more like when I surrendered, he was rushing to my aid with a moment of clarity or a word of consolation, just some way that I would know his tangible presence with me in the surrender. And specifically, the way that I made those choices was in early morning prayer walks each day, processing my life at present with him, and then choosing to surrender that life again today.
I'm so grateful. And I think I'd wrap this up by just saying to any of you, if you are struggling with your very life or anything else, to know that the one of whom David said, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me." He is with you, and he is with me. And it's his presence and not our faith or anything inside of our character that enables us to say, "I will go with you. I will turn my life and my will over to you." So that's the invitation today. Today, the prayer, "God, your will be done, my life, my will in your hands." And we're on that journey together. Keep coming back. It works if you work it. Tyler, I'm so grateful. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Hey, you just finished a video from our series, Steps, which is based on John's new book releasing February 4th by the same name, Steps. So if you're catching this video before February 4th, you might want to pre-order the book. You can do that at our website, becomenew.com/steps. And when you pre-order, it will unlock exclusive content from John just for you. While you're there, you can subscribe to Become New to make sure you don't miss any future episodes in this series or any other videos that we do. As a community, we believe in spiritual growth one day at a time, and a big part of that is prayer. There's a team of us that meets each weekday, Monday through Friday, to pray for viewers just like yourself. So if you have a specific prayer request, we would love to pray with you. You can text it to us to 855-888-0444 or email it to us at connect@becomenew.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.